As we're looking at this commandment number four, let's rebuild a couple of principles, general principles, really quickly. We study the Ten Commandments in order to obey them. It's not just understanding that we seek, although understanding is valuable because we get an insight through the commands into God's heart. It gives us knowledge that is useful, a relational knowledge of who God is. So the understanding is good, it's knowledge worth having, but they are framed as commands. They are instructions to keep. And so the goal as we learn them is to also live by them. And we seek to obey God not merely out of duty and not mechanically like robots, but crucially with love. He wants a heart that is close to him. In fact, loving obedience is the only obedience that God is interested in. For this is the love of God, that we keep his commandments. Oh, okay, so it's loving obedience, but also love is obedience. To love God is to keep his commandments. And, by the way, his commandments are not burdensome. And why should we have this love of God? Well, love doesn't originate with us. It's not our idea. God loved first, and God grants us the gift of love. It says in the same book, we love because he first loved us. Now, there's two things in here to highlight. God's commandments aren't burdensome. And the first principle, the very first principle of God's love for us. And maybe there's nowhere that we see these two things more clearly combined than in the fourth commandment, which says to keep the Sabbath day holy and to rest on it. And we see this in Jesus' words as well. The same principle. He's not talking of the Sabbath exactly, but he says, come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light. The stories that Lauren read for us this morning from the Gospel of Mark are actually told in each of Matthew, Mark, and Luke. And in Matthew, it comes right after this. So Jesus says, come to me, you who are weary and burdened. I will give you rest. And then Jesus himself comes under fire for picking grain on the Sabbath day and then healing a man with a withered hand on the Sabbath. The command to enjoy a one day in seven Sabbath is a signpost to the 24/7 rest to be found with Christ. Curiously, the Sabbath command is one of the most controversial of the ten. The questions still flow in modern Christianity about the details. What does it mean, for example, to keep it holy? What can I and can't I do? What counts as work anyway? And perhaps the strangest and most fundamental question of all, do we need to keep the Sabbath today? Gee, wouldn't you want to? But that's the question. That's the debate. Do we even need to keep it? And by the way, it is a valid debate, and I'll talk a little bit about it. So here's how we're going to tackle the Sabbath today. First, we're going to look at the text of the command. So we go straight to the source, just look at the text. And then second, I'm going to try and answer some of those questions about the Sabbath. But even before that, it's worth remembering that the Sabbath command has always been controversial on some level. We saw in today's New Testament reading from the Gospel of Mark, Jesus was accused of breaking the Sabbath. He was accused of breaking the Sabbath. And some modern readers still read it as if Jesus was breaking the Sabbath. He was breaking the Sabbath, and he was saying, in effect, those Sabbath laws don't apply to me. I am Lord of the Sabbath. Okay, I don't think that's what he was doing, but that's one way of reading it. It's actually a recurring feature of his ministry. He seems to ruffle feathers on the Sabbath. He actually seems to go out of his way to upset people on the Sabbath day of all. And throughout Christian history, since Jesus, there have been big shifts and pendulum swings around the understanding and keeping of the Sabbath. So I talked about Eric Little, who for him, even playing sport on the Sabbath day was a thing that mustn't be done. Whereas there have been other long seasons in Christianity where the consensus has essentially been we don't need to keep the Sabbath anymore. And so there's a better than even chance that some of what I say today about the Sabbath is actually a product of my own upbringing and our shared moment in Christian history. Though I promise to you under God to try to offer you the biblical perspective in a way that's balanced so that we can seek to understand it. But remember how we're doing this today. First, we're going to look at the text, and then I'm going to try and tackle a few questions about it. So the text, here it is. Let's read it in full because I've abbreviated it in the version that we've been reading in church. Exodus chapter 20, verse 8 to 11. Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall not do any work, you or your son or your daughter, your male servant or your female servant, or your livestock, or the sojourner who is within your gates. For in 6 days the Lord made heaven and earth, the sea, and all that's in them, and rested on the seventh day. Therefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and made it holy. Exodus chapter 20, 8 to 11. Did you know the Ten Commandments are listed in one other place in the Bible? They all get referenced in other places, but they're written in the same list. Does anyone know what book of the Bible they're referenced in the second time? Put your hand up if you know. Yeah? Robin? Deuteronomy, that's right. Deuteronomy chapter 5. Exodus 20 is the first one. Deuteronomy chapter 5 is the second. Curiously, the name Deuteronomy in the Greek means second law. It's the second time round where Moses, Deuteronomy, like duo, number two, and then nomos is the Greek word for law. So Moses spends a long time reiterating the laws from the Sinai period right before they enter the promised land. So that's Deuteronomy chapter 5. And they are almost word for word in Exodus 20 and Deuteronomy 5, except in a couple of places, and this command is one of them. Okay, so I've broken it into three basic bits. It only really changes in the third section substantially. But let's look at the key bits. Number one, remember or observe, if you like, in Deuteronomy, the Sabbath. First of all, Sabbath, what's the word? What does it mean? The word itself means rest. For the Jews, there was no doubt about which day of the week to observe the Sabbath. Sabbath was the name of the day of the week. And it was Saturday, or for them more strictly, sundown Friday to sundown Saturday. Then notice also here, this is the first of only two commands that are framed positively of the ten. All the others are you shall not, you shall not, you shall not. And then there's two that are a bit different, and this is the first one. It says remember or observe the Sabbath. Now, to say that it's framed positively is not the whole truth. It's introduced positively, but if you look a little bit further down, it does say in verse 10, you shall not do any work. So there's still something prohibited in this one. The words remember and observe, they're not particularly detailed or prescriptive. It sort of indicates a rhythm of observance, something that should be done periodically and regularly, like one day in seven as the day rolls around. They seem to indicate that the idea of the Sabbath wasn't a brand new concept at this point, that maybe the principles of it were already ticking around. But remember, they've just emerged from slavery. They had no freedom in their recent history to obey a command like this or even observe a principle like this. They're being given the grace to return to their rhythm of remembrance of God, of God's love and provision. Second thing is keep it holy. Holy means separate, or to separate, or other. And usually, not just separate, but special. Okay, so it's not merely to separate the whites from the colours, or to separate your children when they're fighting, to keep things apart. It's about, to use the laundry example, it would be to separate your good clothes that you iron and hang from your workout or yard clothes that you just scrunch and dump. Or in the case of children, it would be to separate your favourite child from the other children, which of course you must never do. Okay, but holy is separate but special. All right, here's where it says you shall not. It's quite a large chunk. We've already read it, but essentially you shall not do any work. That is one application of the Sabbath. It seems to be the main one. Don't work. Every other day you do what needs to be done. On this day you rest. In fact, the word Sabbath, as I've said, as well as being the name of that day of the week, it literally means rest. It's the day of rest. And the name for Friday was basically Sabbath Eve. So really their week was revolving around looking forward to this seventh day of rest. But notice that right before not working, it says, not just do not work, but this day is a day for the Lord your God, or to the Lord your God. This day should probably be defined as much by what good and productive things you choose to do, as well as by the labour that you agree not to do. And then in the final section is where the two accounts change. The command is the same, but it gives two different reasons. So in Exodus, Moses says, the 1-in-7 rhythm is built into the structure of creation. Since Genesis chapter 1 says that God created the heavens and the earth and everything in them over a period of 6 days, and then Genesis chapter 2 says on the seventh day God himself rested. So there's a principle at play from page 1. But then in Deuteronomy, Moses says this command to rest is a gift. It's a gift because the people were once slaves. In Exodus, for 6 days, the Lord made heaven and earth, etc. In Deuteronomy, it says, you shall remember that you were a slave in the land of Egypt, and the Lord your God brought you out from there with a mighty hand and an outstretched arm. Therefore, the Lord your God commanded you to keep the Sabbath day. Remember, yes, he says this command is a gift. It's a gift because the people were once slaves, but the life that God's calling them into is not slavery. It's freedom, true freedom. And a lasting symbol of this is that they will use a whole day each week to recall God's salvation and the freedom and the blessings that flow from being close to Christ, or in that time, no knowledge of Christ but God. This memory of their time as slaves is also a little callback to the previous section in the same command. Notice God says the Hebrews aren't to do any work, but also that in the promised land, they are not to put anyone else to work for them on the Sabbath. So you don't have children just so you can have little slaves to run the bins and all that sort of thing. But you also don't gather slaves so that they can do your work for you. And you're certainly not to take advantage or exploit people groups in your midst just so that you can put your feet up and take it easy, even if it is only one day in 7. So you don't get to keep the Sabbath by enslaving or exploiting others. God's invitation to rest in him means that even by being associated with God's people, even if you don't believe in God yourself, you should enjoy a taste of the benefits of his salvation. This is God's blessing. This is God blessing not only all his people, but also all the nations through his people. And think about the Ten Commands, whether you worship God or not. I think most people look at least 8 or 9 out of the 10 and say, sure, they're pretty fair commands. They're good, and by and large, I'm happy to keep them. But I reckon anyone would be more than happy to live in a society where everyone else is keeping them, wouldn't you? In a society where even if I don't feel bound by these commands, at least I can live with the ready expectation that no one's going to try and kill me or steal me or cheat on my wife with me or anything like that, okay? This is a good society, and we get a break once a week. Okay, that's the text. Now for some questions. I've only put 3 up here. There's so many more. There is so much that I'm leaving unsaid today. But here we go. Is the Sabbath Saturday or Sunday? Because I've already said Sabbath was Saturday, but what are we doing in church on Sundays? Do we need to keep the Sabbath day today? And what if my work rosters me on a Sunday? So is Sabbath Saturday or Sunday? As I said, Jewish Sabbath, Friday night and Saturday day. That still holds, by the way. Jewish people still observe the Sabbath in that way. And there's some Christian traditions that have reverted to this as well, and some individual Christians who observe it in this way. Beginning with the moment of Jesus' resurrection, though, in the Bible, the Sabbath rarely gets mentioned again in the Bible. In fact, the attention shifts very significantly away from the seventh-day Sabbath to the first day of the week. Now, there's no moment where it says, no more seventh-day Sabbath, and now you must observe the Sabbath on a Sunday instead. But we just see a shift in the attention that's given. This verse indicates the shift. For example, Matthew 28, verse 1, after the Sabbath, so we've still got the Sabbath. Toward the dawn of the first day of the week, Mary Magdalene and the other Mary went to see the tomb. And you remember what they found at the tomb? Well, initially nothing. Jesus had risen. He was no longer dead, but he was alive. And then from this point on, the first day of the week, because it's the day that Jesus rose from the dead, the focus of the newly born Christian church shifts towards this first day as not necessarily being called the Sabbath, that name's already taken, but they called it the Lord's Day, which is at least in keeping with some principles of the Sabbath. If we remember from Exodus chapter 20, verse 10, that the Sabbath was to the Lord. It was the Lord's Day, but it was called Sabbath, and so maybe by calling the first day of the week now the Lord's Day, that was them just appropriating the same principle for a new name. Perhaps, maybe that's too far, but there's a principle here that bridges. Here's two other verses that indicate the shift of focus as well. In Acts chapter 20, verse 7, it says, on the first day of the week, we came together to break bread. Pretty clear that from the earliest days of the Christian church, they were gathering together to observe God's commands on a Sunday, to learn from God, to fellowship with God's people, and this was happening on a Sunday, not on a Saturday. And then the Apostle John, when he receives his revelation that he writes down in the book of Revelation, it says, I was in the Spirit on the Lord's Day. So on the first day, the day recollecting and remembering Christ's resurrection from the dead, that was a time that he had given to personal worship and he received a revelation. None of these say anything particularly black and white, but they accumulate to suggest that the attention has shifted to a Sunday. And it rings true now with our experience of, well, churches meet on Sundays, most. Okay. Whether or not you call it a Sabbath on the Sunday, it was uncontroversial from the moment of Christ's resurrection that his followers met to remember and observe his victory over death and slavery on the first day of the week, which is Sunday. This much is uncontroversial in an otherwise controversy-ridden command. That's why we continue to do church on Sundays. It's why, if there is such a thing as a Christian Sabbath, Sunday is it. Do we need to keep it today? Question number two, do we need to keep the Sabbath today? And this is the part where it gets really controversial. And some of you will agree with me and most of you won't. And all of us will agree very slightly with one another. Okay, like I said, I'm going to try to present a few things. It is a bit technical, but again, you know, this isn't the final word. Christian history simply does not have a consensus on this. So I'm going to lay out the no case. No, you don't have to keep the Sabbath. All right, here's part of how it's argued. The Old Testament contains about 600 commands. Theologians divide these commands into three categories: moral, civil or judicial, and ceremonial. Now, the Bible doesn't say, I'm doing the moral commands now, and now I'm doing the civil ones, and now I'm doing this. But you can usually tell by reading it which category they fall into. Moral commands, things like love your neighbour. Okay, that's Old Testament as well as New. Most people agree these commands are still binding. Okay, we've got Old Testament command, love your neighbour. That still follows through. It's a moral daily practice of obedience. The civil or judicial commands are different. They directly were applicable to the nation of Israel that God was building in the land of Canaan after the time of the Exodus. Okay, they had a different political structure, and the laws just don't map on as easily to a new political structure. Or even a new land, or even a new mix of races and demographics. Things to do with, for example, detailing the kinds of consequences if someone breaks a command, or if someone does a wrong against someone else. These civil and judicial commands come in saying, well, this will be the consequence here, here and here. And we realise that even in the New Testament, they're not obeying those commands in the same way. And it's not framed as sin, because remember, they often disobey the commands. But by the time the New Testament comes around, they're not living in Israel under their own king. They're living under occupation to the Romans. And they can't apply even their own laws with the freedom that they would have once obeyed them. Instead, they're required to obey the law of the land. And so these laws don't translate well into other civil structures or a more pluralist or secularized society like today. The ceremonial laws now, the last lot, they're to do with the temple, worship, priests, sacrifices, that sort of thing. Circumcision is one of them. The New Testament, when it says Christ abolished the law and its requirements, is talking specifically about the ceremonial laws. Christ abolished the need for the ceremonial laws, not the moral ones. Because Jesus is the true temple, for example, whereby God dwells with his people and his spirit lives in us. Jesus was the true sacrifice, where our sins were crucified and wiped clean. Jesus is the final true priest, perfectly representing his people and giving us access to God. So the ceremonial stuff is done. Sabbath. Hang on, let's get back to the Sabbath. Which one of these is the Sabbath? Well, which is it? If it's moral, it still stands. If it's civil or judicial, it contains a principle, a grain of a principle, but it's not to be applied in the same way today. If it's ceremonial, well, Jesus has accomplished it, we're no longer bound to it. And at worst, if it's ceremonial, to keep the Sabbath might be to abandon Christ in preference to man-made regulations, at worst. My personal view is it straddles all three. It doesn't have to be, it doesn't have to be just one or the other. But that does make, if I am right and it straddles all three, it makes applying it complex. It makes applying the Sabbath, it means that in a community there's going to be a little bit of give and take, a bit of negotiation. I find it hard to locate it neatly into the last two that no longer apply. For the simple reason, God carved it in stone. That's different. He carved it in stone. Some of the commands in the Bible are contextual to the time and place in which they were given. Only 10 were carved in stone by the finger of God. And God clearly hasn't abolished any of the other 9. So what would make this one so different? So there's at least a moral or there is at least an enduring component to this law. At the very least, a principle that we're commanded to keep. But it's civil and judicial as well. When the command was first given, the penalty for breaking it was death. And that no longer applied, even in the time of Christ. People weren't being stoned for breaking it. And so there was a localized component to the law. That much at least no longer applies for several reasons, but partly because how many people would we have to kill? The keeping of this command makes a huge amount of sense when you live in a uniform society structured in a very specific judicial and civil way where you live in a uniform society and everyone has agreed to be bound by this command. But when you occupy the minority, as the Hebrew people did in the time of Christ, because you've been captured, or you're a refugee, or you've been conquered, or if you're born into multicultural Australia, it's virtually impossible, it's certainly impractical, to keep this command to the letter in a completely uniform way. Now, just because something is very difficult or impractical doesn't mean that that we get a free pass to not do it. There's a lot of impractical things that we must, by obedience and by faith and in love, just seek to obey. But this is a tricky one. It really is complex. There is a ceremonial element to this command as well. There is a, a, like the temple and the sacrifices, God gave the people the Sabbath as part of his covenant to bless them and set them apart from the other nations as his very own. It was sort of a marker for his people to set them apart. And so since Christ has made it even more clear that we are all welcome in his family, and the other barriers that previously existed between the Jewish people and the Gentile people, like circumcision, temple, sacrifices, etc., various food laws as well, since they have been all abolished by Christ, the project of the church has become to make accommodations to one another so we can live together in harmony and in peace. So if we're Jewish, like first century Jewish converts to Christianity, trying to incorporate swathes of Gentile converts, then coming down hard on the Sabbath is frankly counterproductive and not pastoral and not even loving, even though it's a nice thing to say, hey, we rest on this day. But to make that insistence on people whose the rest of their family structure isn't living in that way, it's just, it's complicated. It doesn't mean it's wrong, but it's complex. It does mean that in applying it, and as we look at each other and see, oh, how is this person applying it? You might have views about how it ought to be applied and how other people are failing to apply it, but you may not be necessarily appreciating some of the complexities of another person's situation. Imagine, thinking of complexity, for example, a husband and a wife have two very different views on how to apply the Sabbath. Is it the right thing? Say you are the spouse who thinks, no, strictly, no work for this 24-hour period. Is it actually a loving spouse thing to do to then not lift a finger over that 24-hour period when the rest of life rolls around you? You might say, well, yes, it is, because I'm doing God's will and therefore other people, will accept that. Or it may be that actually, no, I need to make some accommodations here and there for the sake of peace and harmony in the home. Time for one last question. What if my work rosters me on a Sunday? Depends on your work, I think. In keeping with my principle of complexity, let's face it, it probably depends on a little bit more than that. But it does at least depend on your work. One principle that Jesus made very clear was that some things just need to be done as they arise. Jesus was hungry. Jesus and his disciples were poor and hungry. They were walking through a grain field. They took a couple of grains and they were chewing them. That's a valid, even a scripturally valid thing for them to have done on the Sabbath. And then he heightened it to say, remember David, when he was on the run, this is 1,000 years previous, David was on the run, Saul was out to kill him, he was frightened for his life, he sought refuge in the tabernacle, and there was bread set aside, holy bread, that wasn't to be eaten by just anyone. But David was desperate and the priest gave it to him to eat and he wasn't struck down. And that's pitched as that was a reasonable thing. That was a concession because of necessity and mercy that David, him and his men in that moment needed to eat. So there are things that just happen on different days. There's certainly acts of mercy and kindness that we should do as well. Medical emergencies is something that doesn't just, wait till the next day. So hospital staff and emergency personnel should absolutely be willing to work any day of the week with a crystal clear conscience, by the way, just as the Sabbath gives none of us any freedom not to help a person in need just because it's Sunday or Saturday or whatever. There are other services you might be employed in that just don't sleep either. But then how much of the fact that there are other services that don't sleep is because of necessity or need, and how much of it is out of greed? It's not actually very long ago that Sunday trading wasn't a thing. Even I remember it. And nobody actually needs to buy shirts or electronics on a Sunday. That's not a thing. We don't need to. And if you did need emergency groceries, there was always one local convenience store. I think that's, even under the old regime, I think that seems pretty fair. Did Woolworths and Coles really need to occupy Sunday trading? Or did they just want to monopolise all trading? Was that need? or greed? Was it a community service? Did we need Woolworths and Coles to open their doors for us on a Sunday? Or was it our greed that made us all secretly very happy to accept it because the prices are better at Woolies and Coles than they are at new convenience stores? Some industries do work on Sundays. Christians, I think, should try to not work on Sundays, if possible, even in certain industries. Prioritising giving the day to the Lord for worship and rest. This might mean declining Sunday shifts. It might, unless you're in like an emergency sort of role. It might mean looking for a role in that industry that gives you a regular weekend. Or in other cases, it might mean some compromise, trying to minimise Sunday work where you can and catching up on your worship and rest on a different day of the week. Sunday isn't a particularly restful day for me, for example. And so I try to apply a principle here. Let's revisit, finally, Eric Little. Here's a guy who honoured God and gave him his best. But the 1924 400-metre sprint was not the race of Eric Little's life. Eric Little was a seriously gifted guy, seriously gifted. He was a world champion sprinter, record holder, and he played international rugby union. Even in that era, opportunities for fame were presenting themselves to Eric Little. 1924, gold medalist, world record holder. 1925, the next year, Eric Little hops on another boat, but this time to China. And he served in China as a missionary for almost 20 years. The Japanese invaded China in 1943, but Eric Little didn't abandon the project he'd given his life to. He was imprisoned and kept as a prisoner by the Japanese. This doesn't make the movie, funnily enough. Kept as a prisoner by the Japanese. In that time, he developed a brain tumour and he died in obscurity in a prison in China. Gold medal gathering dust somewhere. The example of Eric Little is not so much about giving one day in seven to God, although that's sort of the moment in film. It's about giving the whole of life to God, which I suggest is exactly the principle of the Sabbath command. Whole of life remembered one day in, remembered particularly and in a wholly separate way one day in seven, which if you remember is also what God has done for us, giving his whole life, his one and only son who died for our sins. Remember, Jesus has delivered us from slavery to sin, just as God delivered the Israelites from slavery to Pharaoh, and we have rest one day in seven and a lifetime to focus on his salvation and all of eternity to enjoy his abundant life. Let's pray. Father, the rain we can hear falling is its own gentle and steady reminder of your love and grace to us. Father, we thank you for your love in your good commands, and particularly in this one to keep the Sabbath. To treat one day special, holy to you. Father, may we seek to obey. It's a funny one to try to worm our way out of. Why do we do it, Lord? Is it greed? Is it really theological arguments? Is it our knowledge that puffs us up? Is it ignorance? Father, whatever it is, we bring these things to you. We ask for you to correct us, to guide us. Help us to courageously and cheerfully keep your word. And we thank you for Christ who loves us, who allows us the grace to figure these things out as we go. May we, in love, obey you. Amen.